in the 06010.
Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. Field Yates, Matthew Barry, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp all here on a Monday, wrapping up all but one game from Week 5, as we still have the Ravens and the team that used to play in Baltimore, the Colts, tonight on Monday Night Football. Unfortunately, we have our busiest injury week of the year, and we're going to dive into that. Stefania is about to probably be breathless in about, 10 or so minutes from right now as she gets through all the injuries. But before we get to those, which we'll start with Russell Wilson, Matthew, I'm going to let you have the mic and just do what you do best.
Yeah. Well, listen, apologizing for being wrong is what I do best.
Correct. That's what I was getting at. You could have also said that, just yak or whatever.
Yeah, just, make stuff up. Here's the thing. So last week we talked about Russell Wilson's injury. Last Friday show, Russell Wilson had left the game with a finger injury. And I said, look, this guy isn't missing time. This guy has never missed a game in his life. He's played through MCLs. He's played through hammies. He's not missing time. Blah, 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 blah. It's a finger. He's got nine others. He's playing. And I was partially half joking, partially half serious, because, again, I do really believe in the healing powers of Russell Wilson. And even so, since the injury has happened and the surgery, his timeline has magically moved up. It was 6 to 8 weeks initially. And then
Schefter
saying maybe four. We'll see. We'll see. But I think the two things are important here. I think two things are very important here. Number one is that I'm not wrong yet.
Whoa.
He still has yet. He hasn't missed a game yet.
That's the number one thing is I'm not wrong yet.
You are
not
such
wrong
a sandbag.
I'm not wrong yet.
You are unbelievable.
Listen.
I can't believe you're doubling down.
Listen, on Sunday, no. I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to be wrong in the future. I'm just telling you.
It's
still Sunday night.
I thought this was the part where you owned it.
Bad call. No, but I think the most important thing is, honestly, I think the most important thing beyond that is that it's not even my worst call of the week. You know, because as long as I'm falling on the sword here and doing the mea culpa, I'm gonna, because look, I pat myself on the back, I celebrate good calls, and so I think it's also important to acknowledge, when I make a horrifically bad call, putting Justin Herbert on the hate list this week, which I did, I have to own that. That's just a brutal, awful, stupid, dumb call. Daniel, I think I should be suspended from the podcast for the next month.
I think that you need to be here for next month.
No. What he said. I agree. Whatever you just said.
Good.
No. Here's the only reason.
I'm going to go to a conference in Monaco. Look, I just didn't reflect on my bad choices. Cleveland's defense didn't show up. The brutal performance by the Browns. But whatever. Horrible call on the Justin Herbert thing. Horrible call on Russell Wilson. The injury is much more serious than I thought. I didn't mean to make light of the injury. It's just more just having fun. Anyway, I just wanted to fall on the sword and acknowledge my horrific misses. And that there were more than that, but those were, I think, the two big ones, the two glaring ones from week number 5.
Well, the best part about the Russell Wilson thing is that sometimes what happens is when you and I don't see eye to eye on something.
Yes, sir.
The fans, the listeners, it's like when kids see their parents arguing.
Right.
They're like, Mommy and Daddy, you're going to get divorced?
Right.
And it's like, no, we just couldn't decide where we wanted to go for dinner tonight.
Right.
Relax, it's okay.
We'll Daddy and his teenage son are fighting. Right.
No. Yeah, something like that. In any event, all is good. Just another victory for me. What can I say?
I wouldn't use the word another. I would say a victory.
Wow.
I would use a victory for you.
Wow. Right.
I would use a.
Did that didn't count a couple weeks ago?
It's fine. Whatever.
Who cares about war room, right? Just war room. No one cares about that.
The great part about being old is you don't have to.
I'm 5-0 in my league against my twin daughters.
Hang on. No, absolutely. No. Listen. Yes, you defeated me in War Room, by the way. But in the Survivor League, I'm still alive and you are not.
Okay,
so, I mean, you and I played a zillion leagues together.
Wow,
so it's whatever.
Yeah,
but yes, you defeated me in War Room.
There we go. Anyway,
but I'm still alive in the Survivor League.
And you know what? Until Sunday, you're technically not wrong about Russell Wilson. So let's move on, because the important part of the show is Stefania's insight. And Stefania, Matthew did reference that all of a sudden the timeline for Russell Wilson has become a bit of a moving target. But let's just focus in on what you know and what you expect.
So here's the thing. The Seahawks put out a press release after Russell Wilson had surgery, and I think it was very helpful in explaining what specifically was going on. And since Thirsty Kyle was such a good subject when I demonstrated what happened with the mallet finger portion of the injury, I'm bringing him back to show you the rest of the information about the injury. So again, Russell Wilson's third finger, right? And he tore the extensor tendon, which straightens it out. And so his finger was drooping like this. And when the Seahawks issued their press release, they explained that during surgery, he had an extensor tendon repair. So this is reattached and the finger is straightened out. But he had also suffered another injury. He had a fractured dislocation at this joint. So we only saw the damage here, but internally there was a fractured dislocation here and it was comminuted, which means there were multiple fragments. So if you can imagine, the surgeon had to go in and realign these little fragments and get that joint realigned, stabilized with several screws. So now Russell Wilson has a few screws in his hand and a pin to hold this in place. And there was a nice quote from Dr. Steve Shin, thank you, who is the hand specialist who had also operated on Drew Brees, who performed the surgery, saying he fully expects Russell Wilson to be able to have a full recovery, which I don't know if people can appreciate, but that type of injury, particularly the fracture, the one we didn't know about, could have compromised his ability to perform at the quarterback position. So the good news is the repair was successful. Now comes how long until you can return. Because of the screws in the joint, you could actually move that part fairly quickly. The problem is where the tendon is repaired, that tendon's so tiny, it's like tissue paper. And if you bend it too soon after all that work, you will cause the repair to fail. So I think Any timeline of 4 weeks is questionable at this point. I think it's a discussion that Russell Wilson and his doctors will have going forward as they determine what is the best case scenario for him.
You see the schedule there on your screen if you're watching us at home, at Pittsburgh versus New Orleans versus Jacksonville bye. If you're Seattle, you figure maybe you can get through Jacksonville and after that bye week. After that bye week feels like maybe that's hopefully something to aim for. Obviously, you know, we know that two things. Russell Wilson is a very quick healer, and if there's any way for him to get back out on the field, he will do it.
Yeah, I certainly, he's as tough as there can be. I also, and maybe this is the influence of Stefania on me throughout all these years, like being a quick healer is great with some things, but like your finger is your finger here, right? Like there's only so much you can do. I've seen guys come back from strains and sprains and things like that, but what she just described sounds a lot more complex than like being a good healer. But
see, I believe Russell Wilson will spend these 4 weeks learning how to throw left-handed.
Okay.
Well, that is what I think is going to happen. I believe he is that talented. And he's going to be like Kenny Stabler. He's going to come out there and he's going to be the greatest left-handed quarterback of all time
in
the second part of his career.
One really quick question, and this is tough, but understanding that he's going to be out for 4 weeks.
At least.
Is there any way a team looks at like, hey, do you want to buy low on Russell Wilson? Now, it's kind of tough to trade for quarterbacks, especially guys like Russell Wilson. Is there a way that, just for anybody thinking that, is there a way to be able to acquire Russell Wilson, know he's going to be out for a while?
I got a question for you, Dana.
I'm going to answer that question with another question because I'm going to ask this to Stefania.
Typical, yeah.
Do you think there is a chance? Seattle's struggling right now, right? They're in a really tough division and they're struggling.
Their first round pick goes to the Jets. Not a chance. They owe their first round pick to the Jets. They're not tanking.
They're not tanking this year. They shut down Russell Wilson for the year. I'm not even saying the tanking piece. Chance. I'm just saying like is there risk of further injury to Russell Wilson? Is there a scenario in which his health might potentially be compromised once he's quote fully healed here, where the Seahawks say like, listen, this guy's our franchise. It ain't our year.
You sure about
you know
that?
What?
Might not be there next year.
Yeah. I'm just throwing it out.
I think all parties would be interested in having him return. The question is when. And as I said, it really depends on what you want out of that extensor tendon repair. If it fails, if he comes back too soon and the finger will start to droop again, third finger on a quarterback, it's up to him whether he wants to take that risk or not. If he waits, you know, the 6 to 8 weeks, those chances of having that repair fail get significantly smaller, which is why I think the longer time frame is more reasonable. Once you get to fully healed, like if you're past 8 weeks, no real further concerns.
And plus, like you can't be a player who's built this entire brand on being like the plucky, overlooked underdog who will do whatever it takes, even when he's reached the highest mountaintops of the NFL. The guy who, during his off days in the offseason, goes and tries to play baseball for the Yankees, the Texas Rangers. Like,
right.
When he's good to go, he's coming back. The Seahawks won't let it happen. Russ won't let it happen. It just may not be for 6 or 8 weeks, as Stefania has said.
Just wanted to throw
more
it out
on
there.
The fallout tomorrow, because we have to get into waiver pickups and things of that nature, and potentially the value of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett that we discussed on Friday. But Stefania, a couple other injuries that were injuries coming into week five, but we learned more about them, including George Kittle, who's now on IR.
Yeah, calf injury for George Kittle, just like his quarterback, only in Kittle's case, he had tried to play through it the prior week and clearly was struggling. He was not himself. I think the team's collective thought process was, if we push through this, it could risk him getting worse and being compromised for longer. So we set him aside, put him on IR, and he misses 3 games minimum.
I'm going to save this discussion for more time at a different date. George Kittle is a real NFL tight end, is about as fantastic as he gets. As a fantasy tight end, he's completely fallen off anywhere close to the top tier. Between availability, the fluctuation in production, because some weeks they don't need him to catch passes. It's remarkable how different the gap is between, let's say, a Darren Waller and Travis Kelce and someone like George. He's amazing as a football player, but for fantasy, it's just a different game in so many ways.
I'm in a long-time keeper league. It's so amazing. And at one point last year, and we can only play one flex, and it's not tight end premium scoring, I had Kelce, Kittle, Darren Waller, and Hunter Henry. And so, like, I had four tight ends, and I could only play two of them in any given week, and my scoring isn't conducive to normally playing two tight ends. So I was looking to trade some of them to upgrade at other positions, and guy wanted Kittle, and I'm like, no. Ultimately, I ended up trading Darren Waller. This is at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, I regret that now.
Okay.
Today is beat up on myself together. Day.
Don't worry. I know. Better days are ahead. Stefania, let's get to Dalvin. We'll talk more about George Kittle and sort of the value and just maybe where we missed during the preseason, maybe where we hit during the preseason. That's good. Let's get back to the injuries, though, Stefania. Dalvin Cook, another one who we thought had a chance to play on Sunday, and this one kind of went right up to game time, and he was out. What more do we know about that ankle issue?
It was obviously very questionable coming in, and all week he'd been hinting that he was going to try and play through this, and I think maybe that was his plan, but ultimately not confident enough in the ankle, either he or the team. He had a short workout before the game and then left the field, and shortly thereafter was ruled out of the game. Look, this has to be with the long-term health of him in mind, and also knowing that they have Alexander Mattison. I mean, it doesn't sound like Dalvin Cook is far off, but we saw in the week prior, in week four, that when he played in the game, he had to come out briefly because he aggravated the ankle. So another situation where I think the team wants you to get better before you're back on the field.
They play the Panthers next week, but then they have a bye a week after. Is there any chance, Stefania, you think they rest him one more week, let's get to the bye, and then have him 100% afterwards?
I think it really depends. I mean, the fact that they've been so willing to go down to the wire to play him tells me that he's not far off. And if he's ready, I think he plays. I don't think they automatically hold him out.
By the way, they're 2-3.
Yeah.
Barely. Right. Like we all said yesterday, like if there was ever a time to rest Dalvin Cook, that would be it. They got lucky yesterday. It's just a fact. Let's keep things moving forward, though, to Alexander Mattison. And there was a time, and I remember during the preseason, we note, like, hey, if you're going to have an insurance running back, there might not be one more valuable than Alexander Mattison. He will be a top 10 play if something happens to Dalvin Cook. And the rhetoric was, yeah, I've seen this before. Been down this road. It hasn't happened. Yes, it has. Twice this season, he's filled in for Dalvin Cook. Here's how he's performed in those two games. 153 yards and 7 catches plus a touchdown yesterday, good for 26.3 fantasy points. The prior game, he had another 23 fantasy points. Like, he has been awesome in two starts this season. Alexander Mattison has 324 yards and 13 catches, Matthew. He is as good of a plug-and-play option as there is. The Vikings don't have one RB1. They have two RB1s.
I agree with you, and here's my question. What is the value, Field Yates, if you have Dalvin Cook on your roster, but you don't have Alexander Mattison?
Yeah.
And so you obviously would like to acquire him.
Right.
What would you, if you had Dalvin, if you were a Dalvin Cook manager, what would you give up to acquire Alexander Mattison?
So let's assume that you have a third running back on your roster. You have to, right? I mean, obviously most teams do. But let's say Dalvin Cook's one running back, whoever your second running back is, and then your third running back, whatever that player was, assuming it's not like, I don't know, if somehow you lucked into.
Leonard Fournette is who that player is.
Leonard Fournette is everyone's third running back.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that fair?
No, but that's a fair one. Not a terrible one.
But like, I would consider after this bye that comes up, because you're going to be in a pinch next week without either Cook or Madison available. I would consider trading my third running back for Alexander Madison, because this ankles don't tend to just like go from bad and bulky and a problem to like zero risk of recurrence going forward. So there's some serious value now in Alexander Madison.
Yeah, I might actually
your top bench player.
Here's what I would do. I wouldn't try to trade now. Wait till you know, like, you know, we think Dalvin Cook probably practices in full this week. Again, game time decision, or at least we'll hopeful, see. Right? But
yeah, but I will tell you this. Yeah. He did not practice last week.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he was out there in pads with his helmet, but he didn't practice. So you can't necessarily use practice as your guide.
Fair enough. I'm just trying to think of like a way, like if I have Dalvin Cook, and if I have Dalvin Cook, one of the things I'm going to do is try to acquire Madison, but as cheaply as possible, right? So wait till maybe I might actually try to trade for him during the bye, and with the assumption that Cook plays during Carolina, right? And so you're like, look, he didn't play last week, you know, you're not gonna be able to use him this week, like, but I think it's important. It's important, especially if you have playoff aspirations. Like, if Cook goes down, you're gonna be able to replace that production pretty closely with Minnesota and Alexander Madison. I would be aggressive in trying to get that player.
Totally agree on that. Stefania, by the end of the game yesterday, the Giants were on the phone looking for free agent wide receivers to play for them, because they were just the battered and the bruised and, in one case, the ejected offense. Let's go through all their injuries from yesterday. Unfortunately, we have to start, though, with Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, that was, it was one of those injuries where when you saw it happen, you really knew exactly what it was. He got tangled up with a defender, stepped on his foot, and you saw Saquon's ankle roll so that the outside of his ankle, the ankle bone, went towards the ground. The sole of his foot faced inward. That's called an inversion sprain of the ankle. Ugh. The risk when you have something that's that significant, it looked like it went 90 degrees in, right, is that, you know, how much damage is there beyond the soft tissue? Is there a fracture, et cetera? Saquon, obviously in great pain, kind of hopped off to the sideline. The camera showed his ankle after they got the tape in his shoe off, and you could see this goose egg forming on the lateral or the outer part of his ankle. The immediate swelling, again, cause for concern. He was ultimately carted back. Initial x-rays negative. He is getting more testing today. Jordan Ronan posted a story on ESPN.com citing sources saying that they thought it was a sprain, and if everything came back positive from the tests, it would be only a couple of weeks. Here's the thing. When you are coming off a major injury, ACL reconstruction, MCL, meniscus injury like Saquon had, you want to make sure the ankle is really ready for you to be functional on it, because you don't want to end up overloading the area that has just recovered from this other extensive injury. So I think that is really the thing that it's the variable that makes this a little bit different for Saquon. So they're hoping on minimal miss time, but it will be tricky.
All right, so this is the second injury, of course, that Saquon has dealt with in the past year or so. He did not miss any time to begin this year as he came back from that ACL tear, but we have seen the Giants have to manage Saquon Barkley in the past. I want to just run through all the other injuries, Stefania, and then I think, Matthew, let's come back to a couple of thoughts on this Giants offense. But Daniel Jones left yesterday, and you said that when Saquon got hurt, you kind of knew exactly what happened. Sadly, such was the case as well for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, he ran into Cowboys linebacker Jabril Cox, and it was a hit. It may be helmet to helmet, but clearly he was not quite right afterwards, and it appeared to stumble a little bit woozy afterward. He also had the wind knocked out of him, so combination of concussion and that. He ended up being carted off the field as well. There was some encouraging news that he was seen talking with his parents outside the locker room in the final minutes of the game, so you like to hear that. But obviously he'll be in the concussion protocol going forward.
And how about Kenny Galladay, Stefania, who himself left the game early with a knee issue?
I mean, has Kenny Galladay really been 100% healthy this year? Ever. He really hasn't. He said that his knee was hyperextended during the game, tried to play with it, but it was frustrating, ended up getting worse. He did not participate in the second half. I mean, this is another one where you look at the combination of injuries. He's had hamstring injury, hip injury, groin issue, even all through the preseason and into now. This has got to be a frustrating is probably the most apt word to describe it, but we'll see what his status is. He expected to get an MRI today.
All right. So a lot. And by the way, I mentioned Kadarius Toney getting ejected, or I alluded to it. He was awesome during the game. We're talking about him for a second. He got banged up at one point too. He went to the sideline, got his ankle taped. He's all good, but he ended up getting ejected from this game for throwing a punch at a Cowboys player. Matthew, let's get into a couple of pieces here. First of all, I think we have to start with Devontae Booker filling in for Saquon Barkley, because yesterday the Giants, you never have a plan for when a guy goes down, never have a perfect plan, I should say, but it was clear that Devontae Booker is the guy. Devontae Booker had a rushing touchdown yesterday. He had a receiving touchdown yesterday. He is not Saquon Barkley, obviously. However, until Saquon Barkley returns, he's probably a low-end RB2, right, based off of potential usage and the fact that he is a very good pass catcher. He showed it last year with the Raiders. He showed it again yesterday with the Giants.
And as we've seen from the Giants' offense, they want to throw passes to the running backs, especially given how many of their pass catchers are banged up. Yeah. So I would suspect he should be a very popular waiver wire pickup this week. I would assume he makes your list.
He does. He might be number one. I have a different thought of number one, but he's up there at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would, well, we'll get to that game in a second. But my thought is that he's not he wouldn't be number one for me,
yeah,
but he's on the list. It's not a... doesn't take long to get to him, and he should be rostered in 100% of leagues, because he's a starting running back on a functional offense, and Saquon Barkley is rostered in 100% of leagues.
No doubt about that. But the player that I think has a chance to be the number one waiver ad this week, maybe, is Kadarius Toney.
Yeah.
And Kadarius Toney was the 20th overall pick in the draft. This guy is not some out of nowhere surprise.
Yeah.
His usage early in the season was not great, and perhaps it was because Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton were healthy and Saquon Barkley was at least trending towards 100%.
And can I give you a question? And just, you know, so I want to give a quick impression of, after Kadarius Toney was drafted by the New York Giants, mm-hmm. I want to give you a quick impression of both fantasy managers, especially those in dynasty leagues,
okay,
and also kind of the media. You know, the critics, the draft pundits.
Okay.
Quick impression of their reaction to the Giants drafting Kadarius Toney 20th overall. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Lisa, can we take a wide shot here? Thank you. Go to two. Take a wide shot here. Just want to get ready. Give me 1 second. All right, here we go. All right, I'm going to be on one.
All right, we'll stay on one. We'll stay on one. Don't worry about going to two.
We'll stay on one.
We'll stay on one.
We're going to go wide. Here's a quick impression.
For the audio podcast, Matthew is yawning silently while taking deep breaths, sounding tired.
Whatever. There you go. Thank you very much, end scene. I just, you know what? The entire collective universe there was bored. They thought it was a snoozy pick. They weren't excited about it. They thought it was a wasted pick by the Giants. You don't need all that offense. He's a gadget player. He's not ready for the NFL, is what they said. People in Dynasty League, same thing. They also said, like, you know, we prefer Jamar Chase. We prefer Devontae Smith. Which you understood, right?
See, I mean, all, like, those are fair.
We prefer Jalen Waddle, right? We,
yeah, you know, all, still fair.
A lot of wide receivers, yeah, that people preferred to Kadarius Toney. He was an afterthought. In every dynasty rookie league that I saw, like, he was a late second rounder. Dynasty rookie fantasy draft, he was a late second rounder. The yeah. media didn't care for Kadarius Toney.
It was semi-defensible, though. No, it wasn't the player. It was the situation, because this is the same team that had signed Kenny Galladay and still had Sterling Shepard. And
I think it was I definitely saw some people say they thought he was still raw and that he was more of a gadget guy that would be more productive in the NFL than he would be fantasy-wise.
Right. So, but here's what I will say, though, is that we're going to have a bunch of waiver wire ads that are specific to filling in for an injury, whether it's Devontae Booker stepping in for Saquon Barkley. We'll talk about the Chiefs and their running back situation in just a minute. We'll talk about quarterbacks that can fill in for Russell Wilson for a finite period. Kadarius Toney might be a thing for the rest of the season. I know that Sterling Shepard is going to get back at some point, and Kenny Galladay probably will too, and same with Darius Slayton. But if you're the Giants right now, the best player on your offense, the best player is Kadarius Toney. And it's just, you have to find ways to get him the football, because what he's doing is making NFL defenders look like, I don't know, like subdivision defenders against him last year in Florida. He is ridiculously shifty. He's so fun to watch.
I was just about to say, very fun to watch.
He's got to corral the emotions, obviously. He got kicked out of the game.
Right.
But Kadarius Toney might be the best waiver wire ad you can make for the rest of the season that came out of yesterday. All right, let's come back in a second with more injury updates. But before we do that, no matter what the sport, professional leagues go through a rigorous process to select the best athletes for their teams. What if you had the tools to put that type of rigor into your hiring process? Well, you've got them when you use ZipRecruiter. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. So how does ZipRecruiter scout the best and brightest for your team? Its matching technology scans resumes across its network of millions of job seekers to find qualified candidates for your open roles and proactively presents them to you. Then you can easily review recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. No wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
It's been a great start to the NFL season, and it only gets better at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. DraftKings is putting new customers in the center of the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Get in on the action right now. It's really simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Feel the NFL action like never before with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, and the best part? So you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings app now. Use code FFF. This week, new customers can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Enter code FFF to get a free shot at millions in total prizes with your first deposit. That's code FFF. Only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
We're back now with more injury updates, and Stefania, we go to Pittsburgh, where Juju Smith-Schuster left the field yesterday. I think he was actually in tears because of the pain. What's the update on that shoulder injury?
It was clearly a painful injury. He took a shot kind of to the shoulder chest area. He was sent to the hospital, actually, for further evaluation. Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporting this morning the Steelers are expected to put him on injured reserve and are fearful he may miss the rest of the season.
All right, so that's no good for a guy that's in a contract year. Of course, he re-signed for one season with Pittsburgh this past offseason. Matthew, we know what's going to happen, though. More work for Chase Claypool. I don't know if you can get more work for Diontae Johnson.
Right.
I know yesterday was a quiet day after that long catch early in the game, but as we know, he's routinely amongst the target leaders in the NFL. Is there a third pass catcher that you think this maybe means more work for, whether it's a Pat Freiermuth perhaps, James Washington?
Yeah, I mean, Freiermuth is sort of interesting. I know they like him a lot, and you know, in terms of sort of the middle of the field where Juju was doing a lot of his routes, feels like he could be sort of interesting, but honestly feels like this is
Chase Claypool.
Chase Claypool, and you know, I don't know, maybe Najee Harris gets 15 targets a game now instead of like the 12.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, Freiermuth would just because of the desperation that we have at the tight end position, he's sort of interesting to me. But I don't listen, Ben looked better yesterday. Give credit where credit is due. He definitely looked better yesterday. The offense looked better. It was a nice win for Pittsburgh at home against Denver, against a good Denver defense. But I don't have a ton of confidence so far in this offense. Like, yeah. I believe in the talent of Diontae Johnson. I believe in the talent of Chase Claypool. I do think Freiermuth is an interesting guy later on, but can you got Claypool, you got Johnson, you got Najee Harris. Can this offense support 4 fantasy
Probably
relevant
not.
Players?
Probably not.
I'm not sure. You know what I mean?
Do you know how many targets Diontae Johnson had yesterday, Matthew?
I don't, off the top
of
my
head. I'm guessing like 3?
2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he had the big play.
He had one big play. Yeah, like it's infuriating.
Well, I mean, You can't come. That's like, you know, it's like a Devonte Adams has a bad game every once in a while.
It's the usage. Deontay Johnson should just be getting more targets.
Well, he gets
I'm
all
saying.
The time. But like every other game, he gets a ton of targets. Like every once in a while, you're going to have a weird, like just an outlier, right? And by the way, he made good on that one target. He got that one catch for 50 yards and a touchdown. I believe he had at least one catch called back yesterday because of penalty as well. So
I guess in my thought, when I say it's infuriating, it's like if Juju Smith-Schuster goes down, you would think, oh, great, now Deontay's going to get a ton of targets. But no, literally nothing came to him that felt like
when I watch those games, I don't feel like the routes that Juju Smith-Schuster runs and the role that he plays in that offense is so different than Deontay Johnson.
Of course.
Deontay Johnson's role is still the same, and it meant more snaps for Chase Claypool. And yeah. I don't know. I feel like that offense is still a work in progress.
Yeah, I would just say that, like, again, this happens very rarely for Deontay Johnson. So I'm not going to complain because he got the one. I mean, he made good on that one day, on that one catch. So it obviously kept the day alive.
But let's be clear. In terms of the complaints that Daniel has about football yesterday, that should be low on your list.
Right? I don't even have Deontay Johnson in any of my fantasy rosters.
Don't start on your list.
All right, so fine. Let's keep things going here. And yesterday, you warned us before the game began that, hey, Curtis Samuel may play, but I'm not so sure he'll finish the game for Washington. What's the status on that groin injury?
Yeah, that actually happened. He left the game after aggravating that groin injury. This is something that has bothered him for almost 4 months and caused him to miss the first three games of the season. Never really felt like he was healthy coming into yesterday's game, and that was the worry. And this just sort of confirms that. I think he's a player I'd be avoiding until there's some real obvious progress in terms of his health.
Hasn't worked out so far for Washington, who's paid pretty good money for Curtis Samuel this offseason. It almost feels like you just got to shut it down for a while and come back when he's 100% and just hope that you can get as much as you can out of him once that takes place.
Let's be very clear. In terms of things that Washington has paid a lot of money for that hasn't worked out this season, Curtis Samuel is low on the list.
I don't know, man. I mean,
our defense is brutal. It's one of the worst defenses in the NFL, and they have paid a lot. I mean, like the amount of money they pay for Landon Collins, the amount of money they pay to William Jackson, the amount of money they pay for that defensive line. They use a first-round pick on a linebacker that can't even get on the field. Like, it's awful. It's awful. It's disgusting, honestly, is what it is. And I never want to publicly ask anyone to be fired. I never do. Like, I mean, like, kids are involved, families are involved, moving are involved, and somebody losing their job is a real thing. But I will say this. For whatever reason, Jack Del Rio's squad this year has not lived up to snuff in any way, shape, or form. They are among the last in the NFL in almost every important statistical category. Yeah. They are awful.
I think two things happened.
They're awful. It's a Hail Mary. Jump. Like, weird things happen, but watch the radio play that. Like, they don't even jump. Yeah. Like, try to knock it down.
Two things happened.
Yes, sir.
They beat up on, like, last year was about as bad of a quarterback schedule as you could ever face. Like,
I get it.
They preyed on just awful quarterbacks last year, and they started reading their press clippings this offseason. They bought into it. They're like, oh, we'll be the top defense in the NFL. They're the worst.
I mean, in
many cats. It's weird. Yeah. It's bizarre.
They're Jaguars North.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, Mid-Atlantic. Tell me I'm wrong. Thirsty Kyle.
No.
Demand that you look up bad Washington football team stats just so I can like bathe in it and like and just I want just Consider as many bad Washington football team stats as possible, but so I can just like, you know,
we gotta
like
go,
soak in it. All right, go ahead.
Stefania, Damian Harris, weird game for him yesterday. He left the game because he fumbled on the 2-inch line. Oh, I mean, fantasy heartbreak right there.
Brutal.
Eventually comes back into the game and then leaves it again later, and he was in a lot of pain.
Yeah, he left twice, but it's unclear when the chest injury really started to bother him. He left once in the third quarter, then again the fourth quarter, and he did not come back after that. Again, these are so, there's so many possibilities. You don't want to speculate on what it is, but clearly a lot of discomfort for him.
The Patriots are now down James White and potentially also Damian Harris in their backfield. So this backfield that we thought was one of the deepest spots on their team is now all of a sudden very thin, especially after they traded Sony Michel, understandably at the time, by the way, to Los Angeles. Matthew, the next man up is Ramondre Stevenson. He had 11 carries for 23 yards yesterday. At the end of the game, it was just he and Brandon Bolden amongst active running backs. Stevenson was the preseason MVP by at least my vote. He has been okay, not great so far, carrying the ball for the Patriots. I think there's a chance.
that the workload is his to have, right? Like Brandon Bolt's a fine player. He's, you know, he's one of those, like, he's a great locker room guy, great on special teams, like knows everything he's supposed to do, just doesn't do it at a super high level, right?
And he's been in New England for a long time, yeah, just, understands the Patriot way.
Glue guy, if you will. He's going to get his opportunities. But Ramondre Stevenson has a chance to be a real player. There are probably two things about that make me...
And J.J. Taylor was inactive yesterday.
He was inactive, yep. There are two things that I think sort of hold back Ramondre Stevenson right
now. Yes, sir.
One is that we know all the time, we always talk about this, what coaches value in running backs is often very dissimilar from what we value in fantasy football, right?
Correct.
He can catch. He's a good runner, powerful guy. He ran great in the preseason. Patriots actually ran the football okay yesterday, given the fact they were down four offensive linemen. But is he going to be able to be on the field all the time because of the pass protection issues and the fumbling issues that kept him off the field early in the season?
Right.
And the second thing is right now, Patriots might be better off just throwing the football these days. Like,
yeah.
I've heard, I think all the rookie quarterbacks are showing promise. So, like, when I give praise to one, it's not saying that the others aren't doing their thing.
Yep.
Like, Mac Jones looks pretty good right now. And mm-hmm. they look better throwing the ball than they do running the football these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, they have to figure out their offensive identity. And I feel, you know, it's a little heckle and jidey, you know, if that's even a word. But
Jekyll and Hyde, but same.
Jekyll and Hyde. Heckle and jidey.
That is definitely not a word.
Is that not a word?
Not a word.
Again, English is my second language. little Jekyll and Hyde. And so I agree with you. I feel like they haven't figured out what they do well.
It does seem like they throw the ball.
I agree with you. So Ramondre Stevenson should be picked up,
but I agree.
I think we need to know how serious Harris's injury is and might be like, and we also, you know, you want to get those offensive linemen back. I mean, right.
I think they'll get at least two of them back this week. Here's the thing.
They play the Cowboys next week.
And the Jets.
And then the Jets.
So the Cowboys, the Chargers. Game, like, you think maybe probably, I know that like the instinct is to like try to keep them off the field by running the football. I mean, sorry, you want to throw the football because you're going to have to play catch up with them.
Exactly.
I do think the idea, though, part of the idea will be like, let's run the ball to keep it
sure,
off the
field. Sure, to try a bit, if
but
you can.
Anyways, I'll put it this way. Like, I've got quite a bit less confidence in Ramondre Stevenson. I think he's a better talent than Devontae Booker or will be in time.
Yep.
I just think it's a much clearer path for Devontae Booker until Saquon Barkley returns than it is for Ramondre Stevenson until Damian Harris returns.
Right. And we don't know what that timeline yet is for Damian Harris and how bad he's banged up.
Let's keep going here because the Chiefs lost and it was injury added to insult as they got thwarted on their own home field last night by the Bills, who looked like the best team in the AFC, maybe the best team in the NFL, but Stefania, the Chiefs, name a really, really talented player on offense who's not named Patrick Mahomes, who plays a skill position, and he's probably hurt right now. What can you tell us?
For real. And it was weird because there was this weather delay, and I always worry when there are these long weather delays, what's going to happen? Particularly, you worry about soft tissue injuries. What's strange about the rash of Chiefs injuries is that they all seem to be related just to contact in football. The first, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, will start there. Really ugly looking pretzel. He got his leg tangled up underneath him. It appeared to bend back in an unnatural way. Looked like kind of a reverse figure four position. He was in so much pain, lying face down. His medical staff came out to evaluate him. The camera then cut away to commercial, but when it returned, they showed him exiting the field being carried by his teammates, one of whom was Tyreek Hill, who would end up exiting later. You saw his left leg dangling down, and that's what he was having evaluated. You saw him going down the stairs towards the locker room very, very gingerly. They just said on the broadcast that he would remain out for the remainder of the game, but it appears to be a left knee injury for Edwards-Helaire, so we'll wait on the specifics. Tyreek Hill ended up with a left knee injury. Andy Reid didn't say much about it, just that he had a bit of a knee injury. And then Travis Kelce took a shot. If you saw it and you saw the way his neck got rapidly stretched away and then he went to the ground, he was holding his hand, I thought right away, this has to be a stinger because that's the mechanism. The neck gets stretched, the nerves from the neck to the shoulder get stretched, and you get like a zing, like an electric shock down into the arm or the hand because of the irritation to the nerve. So Travis Kelce dealing with a stinger injury as well.
Stefania, how long does a stinger injury usually last?
It's a very good question, Matthew, and it can be anywhere from minutes for it to resolve. So you can get not only the nerve sensation, but you can also get weakness and stiffness around the shoulder. So depending on how significant it is, it can be something that resolves within minutes to days, or it can be something that lasts for several weeks.
Wow. Okay. So, timeline there potentially for Travis Kelce? I thought that was a dirty hit by Poyer.
I mean, it's a tough hit, that's for sure. I thought it was a dirty hit. We'll have to, I feel like there's different places for us to litigate such matters. But that's a tough one for the Chiefs. Yeah, no, listen, you're certainly, I bet there are a lot of Chiefs fans that feel the exact same way as well. I don't think you're alone in that feeling, that sentiment. Yeah. So the Chiefs, this is tough, but let's try to go, Matthew, one by one here, because I think there are some potential in-house solutions for two of those three injuries if they miss time. And it sounds like CEH very well could. Darrell Williams is the next man up. And I think there's pretty obvious indicators that he would have real value. Maybe value that's not that far behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire's value when he's the man in the Chiefs' backfield.
I would actually argue
he has more value.
Yes.
I know.
And
Goal line touches.
Huh?
Goal line touches.
Exactly. They trust him in the goal line. I think he's got more scoring equity than CEH. The challenge for Darrell Williams in terms of scoring equity is CEH when he's healthy, right? They're splitting snaps. But if Darrell Williams is going to get the majority of the work, and you'll see some Jerick McKinnon mixed in, but if Darrell Williams is the starting running back of the Chiefs, they're not pulling him at the goal line the way they do sometimes with CEH. And so I actually weirdly think that Darrell Williams without CEH is actually more valuable than CEH with Darrell Williams, if that makes any sense.
I completely agree.
Yeah, and so this is what I was saying. I hear you on Kadarius Toney, but if I needed a running back this week, Darrell Williams is my number one pickup.
Right. Toney is for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I hear
you.
The
best chance to have 13 weeks of value feels like Kadarius Toney.
I get that.
The best chance to help you in week six feels like Darrell Williams.
Certainly. And if you need a running back, like I prefer Darrell Williams to Devontae Booker. I prefer him to Ramondre Stevenson.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. So he's a useful player. He sounds like he'll have a legitimate role if CEH is not available. When we have more information, I'd say Andy Reid, on the most part, is pretty good about injury updates. We'll, of course, share that and update what it means for the value of these players. As for Tyreek Hill, if he misses time, Matthew, I think we know that the Chiefs have a lot of wide receivers. The question is whether one stands to benefit the most. We had this conversation. I know you and I felt like differently about Mecole Hardman's value if Tyreek Hill was out. You are especially bullish on him. I certainly think he has value.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a must start. I think that was sort of your contention at the time. But if he does, we agree there's only one Chiefs. Like, it's only going to be one Chiefs wide receiver,
right?
Yeah,
probably. I mean, I do think, like, between DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle and now Josh Gordon probably gets more snaps as well, along with Hardman. Like, I feel like it's a little bit of mix and match. I don't know that any of one of them. I guess my point is I feel like if one of them emerges, it would be Mecole Hardman. But I don't feel super confident saying, like, yes, he's a must start, and now he's going to be a top 20 guy. Like, I don't feel super confident in that. I do think they'll go more by a committee approach to replace Tyreek Hill's production. Not that you can replace a Tyreek Hill, but feels like Hardman would be the guy to put. If you had to pick a guy, feels like he'd be the guy to pick, but it feels like Mahomes will spread it around. And by the way, if they're without Travis Kelce, that just changes the entire look of the offense to begin with, right? You know, so really interesting times in Kansas City.
I just want to ask, this is probably a dumb question, but it's on par.
Right.
I'm curious, if Mecole Hardman or DeMarcus Robinson or all these guys can't do it when Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are out there taking coverage away and they're like in, you know, why would I trust them to do it when they're not on the field and they're going to have more attention to it? Like, if they're not working out now with those guys on the field when they're not seeing that, why would I trust them, you know, in this situation?
Because increased volume, increased target share.
I understand that.
Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce command so much attention defensively because they command so much attention from Patrick Mahomes and in that offense. And so now you've got, because, right, like you've seen it at different times this year with different teams, but teams have doubled Tyreek Hill. They have doubled Travis Kelce. They have rolled coverage to one of those guys. And so now with, you know, if both guys were out, you're just like, what are you doing? We're going to double Byron Pringle? Like, no, like, you know, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes just seeing who's going to win a one-on-one matchup.
Right.
And all those guys, I think, have the ability to win one-on-one matchups. And so that's why I think that's the same argument as to why, like, one might not emerge as a consistent fantasy factor.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say a part of that.
And by the way, we've had, like, there have been cases where we've seen a player lose a teammate to injury and see a spike in production. We've also seen the inverse. I want to say it was a couple of years ago where AJ Green was out And rather than Tyler Boyd catapulting your production, he actually went down a little bit because, to what you're saying, Daniel, like defenses paid even more attention to Tyler Boyd. So there are plenty of examples of either school of thought. I think we agree. Like, part of the reason why the Chiefs have been looking for a Josh Gordon or trying to sign a Juju Smith-Schuster in free agency is because they have lacked a number two wide receiver that you consistently can count on. Now we're going to see whether any of them can be counted on. Let's quickly finish up the injuries. We have two more, and I think one of them I know is minor, but let's get the Tom Brady and Joe Burrow, Stefania.
Yeah, Tom Brady was wearing some tape around his thumb and wrist last evening after the game, and so we don't know exactly what the nature of his injury was, but apparently this happened early in the game. He still threw for over 400 yards because he's, you know, Tom Brady. I think he basically said, you know, it didn't bother him too much, and he's just planning on getting treatment and getting ready for the game ahead. Thing is, their game this week is away in Philadelphia on Thursday night.
All right. Mm. Well, listen, if there was ever a time for one of us on this show to be just going crazy and stating, like, this guy's going to be fine. He's not going to miss any time. This would be the time. Listen, Tom Brady's fine. He's fine. I'm telling you right now. He's going to be fine.
Ooh, I don't know. Matthew loves the traveling on a short week narrative. Matthew, you want to jump in here and traveling on a short week, not on Tom Brady?
You bench him? You're benching him.
I'm not benching Tom Brady.
No, you can bench him. Look. Bench him and you can pivot to Russell Wilson, who's not out yet for week 6.
That's true.
Still rank him. Make sure you rank him still.
Yeah, exactly. Russell Wilson has yet to be officially ruled out for week 6. Just saying. No,
he's fine.
I agree with
he's fine. He's fine. Yeah.
I agree.
Stefania. Yeah, like I said, he threw for 400 yards.
Yeah, whatever.
It's a
neck contusion. If he needs another neck, he'll get another neck. It's fine. It's Tom Brady.
Sorry, but that's Joe Burrow has the contusion, though, on his neck.
Right. What does Tom Brady have?
He has a thumb.
That's how much of a non-issue it is.
Right. He has a thumb?
Yes. Yeah, you didn't even notice.
He has a thumb. It's opposable.
Whatever. Russell Wilson's got 9 fingers he's not doing anything with for the next couple of weeks. He could send one. Him and Tom are buddies, I think.
They are tight.
Yeah, exactly.
One more here. Joe Burrow. This one was the neck contusion. Throat contusion.
Well, and it didn't happen on the play that maybe if you were watching the game, you thought it might have, because Joe Burrow launched himself in the air and took a hit that maybe wasn't the wisest for a guy coming off a multi-ligament knee reconstruction. But apparently at some point in the game, and it sounds like it happened earlier, he did something to his throat. They had what was called a throat contusion, basically a deep bruise of the throat, sent him to the hospital for evaluation. You know, when you go to the hospital, they probably would take a CT so they can image it, make sure you don't have any cartilage damage. Sometimes the player will complain of trouble swallowing or if they're having a little difficulty breathing. Those are the things that might send you for more evaluation. The hope is that there's nothing serious and that this will resolve fairly quickly.
Okay. And by the way, I love Joe Burrow. I love the competitor. I love the player. I just hope, like, I'm just for your own good and your own longevity, Joe, just like a little bit less risk is important. Before we get to a live read and then some other thoughts, just a quick update. The Steelers are, in fact, going to put Juju Smith-Schuster on IR, as was reported by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They will now place him on IR. We'll see whether he does return at any point this season. Mike Tomlin, as we know, is the best amongst all coaches in terms of giving us injury updates. All right, we're going to come back and talk about some players, and the question is, now what do we do? But first, hey, Daniel, do you own or rent your home?
Still a maybe, Field. We're going to do this every single time?
I figured there'd be some clarity, but apparently there was not.
Not yet.
Well, I know it can be hard work, but you know what's easy?
Not my divorce process.
That's right. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, we're going to...
wait for the slate, Field.
No. Daniel, I was...
My divorce process was easy, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah. My ex-wife and I, we got divorced. We had a very, very amicable divorce.
Oh, okay. I'm glad for you guys. That's...
I think we had the greatest divorce of all time.
My That's ex-wife pretty great.
No, like, in all seriousness, my ex-wife and I, like, some people don't even know this, but, like, whatever. We got together when we were both very, very young. Mm. We just sort of grew apart. 30s. There was no drama. Yeah. There was no drama. We didn't use lawyers.
Was she from a neighboring tribe, or how did that work?
Did her dad trade her for skins? Is that what you're trying to say? Like back in the day? No. Like, so my ex-wife and I, like, we went to lunch. We went to lunch and we settled ourselves over a lunch.
Oh dear Lord, that would be amazing.
We are friends. We are friends to this day. She has met Beth. You know, like, you know,
it's amazing. You know what's amazing is it is easier to divorce Matthew Berry than it is to negotiate a fantasy football trade with him. I'm telling you from experience, we could go to nine lunches in a row and not
That is amazing. That is amazing.
Well, yeah, my ex-wife was reasonable. That's what
You are not.
You are.
Oh, my goodness.
Now what is the question? And I'm not talking about Matthew's divorce proceedings. I'm talking about what to do after what we saw yesterday. And let's start in San Francisco, where Trey Lance got his first career start. He had 192 passing yards. He had an interception. He had 89 rushing yards, good for 14.6 fantasy points. The 49ers have a bye this week. Kyle Shanahan made it very clear after the game. Jimmy Garoppolo is our starter once he's healthy, and it sounds like there's a chance that could be by the time they're playing football again in week 7. Matthew, Trey Lance, to me, I think what's very clear to me, very clear, is that of the 5 rookie quarterbacks, Trey Lance has perhaps the best shot at upside out of all of them. Yep. Once he's a starter, he also might need as much seasoning as any of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. He has the most upside of any of the rookie quarterbacks, and he also has the longest path to
getting there, right?
Getting consistent playing time.
Yeah.
Because your point, like I almost wonder, and I don't know, you know, we'll do this tomorrow during the waiver show. We'll talk about this. But like, you know, we've been talking about Trey Lance as a stash, right? Yeah. I talked about him as a draft him, yeah, stash him, because this guy could be a league winner once he becomes, and you're just like, well, Kyle Shanahan was just like, nope, Jimmy G's still our starter. Oh, they're on a bye next week. And so, and then they come back. Well, they play the Colts. That's a nice matchup, right? They're at Chicago, home to Arizona again. Like, nothing that, like, isn't Trey Lance welcome to Dumpsville? Like, in a one quarterback league, in a 10 or 12 quarterback league? That's, you know, especially if it's a non-keeper, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, you're obviously in a keeper or a dynasty league, you absolutely are not dropping him. But in a two quarterback league, you're probably hanging on to him as well for the upside. But, like, in a one quarterback league?
Yeah.
Like, I want Trey Lance to be a thing, desperately, more than Stefania.
Yeah, but yesterday, what was most important from yesterday was that we saw what it's going to look like potentially when he is the full-time starter.
Right.
And he had 16 rushing attempts yesterday. That is huge.
Huge.
Justin Fields had 3 for like 2 yards yesterday. Justin Fields is not, he may be like, if Trey Lance is a 10 of an athletic skill, like Justin Fields is like a 9.8.
Right.
But one team is.
What am I?
The scale's broken.
Right. Is a 3-3? I was going to.
3-3.
A 3? Yeah,
don't flatter yourself. Yeah, jeez.
That's high. That's high.
Let's 1-6.
Yeah. So, anyways. Trey Lance, a stash, love the upside long term. Just for now, like, it's clear that if you're going to be looking for a quarterback replacement and he's back as the starter, like, you have to be prepared for, even on a day when he has over 15 rushing attempts, he delivers 14.6 fantasy points, which is not terrible, Matthew, but still, like, the upside will be tapped into long term. Kyle Pitts, the upside was tapped into finally yesterday morning, as Kyle Pitts had 9 catches for 119 yards and a touchdown, Matthew. I know that people will make this about Calvin Ridley not being available. Mm. That certainly played a part in it. But at some point, Matthew, when you're a terrible offense, you need to just say to yourself, he's our second best pass catcher, along with Calvin Ridley. We need to find him the football that much more. I hope that yesterday was, in the same way that I hope the Giants are learning more and more about Kadarius Toney's value, I hope that the Falcons are doing the same thing with Kyle Pitts right now.
I mean, they used the 4th overall pick on the guy, so you would hope that they aren't just the like, oh, look at this guy we got on our roster. Who knew he was good? I would hope their scouting department is a little bit better than that.
Oh, but they are.
Look, I think what's important here with Kyle Pitts is second straight game with 9 or more targets.
Yep.
So, I mean, they were looking for, Matt Ryan was looking for him, and yes, a couple things in his favor, right? No Calvin Ridley, no Russell Gage. They played the Jets. So, like, three very positive things in Kyle Pitts' favor, and they're on a bye next week. But you hope that after, you know, getting really nice target share the last 2 weeks and the breakout game, which, by the way, Kyle Pitts was on the love list, was a top 6 tight end for me this week. So, didn't get everything wrong in love hate.
Just
but Kyle Pitts, hopefully, after the bye, is integrated more into the offense and just. You and I remain bullish on him going forward.
No doubt about that.
I want to ask a question. I know this is going to be out of order than what you want to do, Field. Okay. But I want to ask, coming from that, Cordarrelle Patterson saw a ton of usage yesterday, but I want to know how much, sort of that same question, right? No Calvin Ridley. When you look at Mike Davis and Cordarrelle Patterson as the running backs in that backfield, do you think that Patterson saw so much time because Calvin Ridley was out? Or do you think that there is a, hey, we want to make sure that we're getting him involved more? Or
is it not mutually exclusive for either one of those things?
Yeah, I think it can be both. Honestly, I think the answer is somewhere both. Like, I think they're looking around for guys, right, with Ridley and Gage out. And so here's Patterson, someone who's been productive for them so far this year and is a versatile weapon in their offense. So I do think the increased looks, especially in the passing game, were due to, you know, Ridley and Gage being out. All that said, he's been productive. It is an offense that has struggled so far this year looking for sparks. And Field, you and I talk about it all the time. Football's a weird game. And weird things happen in football, but there may not be a weirder story this year than, as we talked about, Cordarrelle Patterson at age 30 on his fifth NFL team in his eighth NFL season breaking out.
Right.
But like we joke about being 8 years too early, but one of the reasons why I was on him 8 years ago is because he has this athletic freak of nature, you know, where he is big and he's crazy fast, but it's also a massive human being.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So it's like this, it's unbelievable athletic profile. And, you know, maybe the Falcons are the first to sort of figure out how to use him correctly.
And by the way, every year there's a player, it seems like every year, there's a player who we just keep saying, like, it's going to come back down to earth, whether it's Robert Tonyan last year, Eric Ebron a couple of years ago, right? Maybe he's the one player that, like, even if there are indicators that driving Mike Clay crazy right now, like for regression models, like maybe this just keeps up for the most rest of the year. Now, I still think there's a chance that things level off in a major way and you can get a serious value in a sell high. That being said, when there are so few running backs available right now, we've got all these injuries, you may be best served to just hold on to Cordarrelle Patterson going forward.
I just think here's the other thing. I don't think Mike Davis has been super impressive. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, he's been fine.
I think our friend Hayden Winks has noted this. Hayden does a great job, obviously. Works over at Underdog Fantasy.
Yeah.
He has posted videos that, like, for some reason or another, the Falcons blocking, when Mike Davis has the football, is the worst in football. It is, like, ridiculously bad. Mike Davis apparently has, like, more yards after contact than he does before. Like, it's absurd. Like, I want to say he's got something like, let's say it's 200 rushing yards this season. It's, like, 220 after contact. Like, right. It's some ridiculous figure. All right, I want to keep moving, though, to something that I think is important. I want everybody out there to listen up really close, especially if you're someone out there who is kicking yourself this morning because you benched Myles Gaskin yesterday. Here's what I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something right now. You are not alone. As a matter of fact, you were the smart one for doing what you did yesterday. Myles Gaskin, in week 4, not yesterday, but week 4, played 12 snaps. Not in the first quarter, not in the first half, not 12 carries or 12 catches or targets or touches. He played 12 snaps. He was going in the exact wrong direction. So yeah, yesterday he had over 30 fantasy points and I think is RB1 on the week. I get it. I'm sorry. It happens to us all. Anybody with a pulse would have told you to bench Myles Gaskin. We're all in this together. So what we're going to look at this as is not how the heck could we have benched Myles Gaskin or sent him to Dumpsville, which, by the way, hand up. I said to do that last week on the podcast. Send him to Dumpsville. My bad. I mean, I know that doesn't make it feel that much better. But what we can do is...
You benched him in this in the War Room League.
I did.
In a 16-team War Room League, Field Yates, fantasy expert, benched Myles Gaskin.
That's right. For Latavius Murray, which is probably not going to work out for me.
Probably not. But honestly, I'd have told you to do the same thing. Like, I would love to bust your stones over there. But, like, I would have done the same thing. 12 snaps.
12 snaps. 12 snaps.
And playing Tampa Bay. Playing one of the best run defenses in the NFL.
So fantasy football, no matter what you say about it, like, there are elements of pure luck for all of us, no matter how much we love and care about this and put as much as we can into everything we do here at ESPN. There are elements of luck. So here's hopefully the takeaway going forward is that what you have to hope is that the Dolphins went into yesterday's game and they were like, you know something? We stink on offense. We have like 3 good players. One of them is Myles Gaskin. He's a legitimately talented player. So rather than trying to balance things out in the backfield and get Malcolm Brown some work here and Savon Ahmed a decent amount of work there, just let Myles Gaskin do what he does best. Be an outlet in the passing game. Get enough carries to make it worth your while. My hope, Matthew, was that yesterday was not turning the corner because the corner was turned last year, but like doing a U-turn, like coming back to where we were. And like maybe, just maybe, Myles Gaskin can resurrect his value because he doesn't need to have 10 catches like yesterday. If he has 5 to 8 targets a game, which is reasonable for an offense that can't pass protect and has no good wide receivers other than Jalen Waddle right now.
Right.
Like, he could be a legit low-end RB2 again.
Yeah, and that's the, I think that's the important point, is that there was no Devontae Parker yesterday, and Will Fuller looks like he's done for the year as well. You know, so, like, they're you know, I mean, you know, we saw some Preston Williams. We saw Mac Hollins yesterday. I mean, like, you know, so there's just, other than Jalen Waddle, there's, and Mike Gesicki, I suppose, there's not a lot of people in the passing game that demand attention. And so Gaskin, to your point about the fact that pressure was coming in, and so what did Jacoby Brissett do? He just dumped it off to Myles Gaskin quite a bit. And so with, I don't know how serious the injury is to Parker, but with Fuller out for the year and this performance, hopefully Gaskin gets going. Worth noting that he does have at least 5 targets in 4 of 5 games this year. Obviously, last week was the game that he did not, but, you know, I don't know. They're playing Jacksonville next week.
I don't,
in London.
Why, Will Fuller is not out for the year unless there's something, I don't know.
I just look.
No,
he's
out for 2 more games minimum, though.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. I'm just saying it just doesn't look good for Will Fuller. No, no, no.
Just
That's
checking.
What I'm saying. Looks like he might be, like, feels like, I don't know.
Okay.
Stefania, you know more than I do.
It's a lost passing game right
yeah.
now. It's
yeah.
just bad. It's just
that was
really
my
bad.
Point. I guess that was my point. I probably misspoke a little bit.
Guys, yeah. What do you got?
I want to wrap this up, unfortunately. I want to talk about Jamar Chase tomorrow. James
He's
Robinson
good.
Had an incredible game.
Survivor
also good.
Update here.
Dalton Schultz, Dawson Knox, so much stuff. So
also
there's
good.
A bunch
also
that
good.
We are going to get into tomorrow. I'm sorry we didn't get to it today. But really quickly, looking at Monday Night Football, I just want to look at tonight's game. Is there anything that you guys specifically are looking at or things that you're avoiding if you're looking at tonight's Colts-Ravens matchup?
I'm looking at one thing. Does Tyson Williams even play? And if he doesn't, earlier this morning, Adam Schefter had a story about how the Ravens are receiving trade interest in their running backs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine anybody's looking to trade for Devontae Freeman or Le'Veon Bell, who are on the Ravens practice squad, by the way, still.
And who were out there available for teams before, and nobody had any interest.
Yeah, and by the way, they don't look good either. Like, they look like you expect them to look. I think it's a Tyson Williams thing. And maybe Tyson Williams is a trade target for somebody else. But if he's not even active tonight, that would be yet another signal that he could be gone.
Well,
it'll
be interesting,
soon.
Right? So it's 2 running backs tonight that are on the trade block because Marlon Mack, is playing against the Ravens tonight. And so might be a showcase of potential trade targets, running backs. I want to see how this running game goes. This is a tough matchup against Baltimore. Offensive line for the Colts is banged up. Can Jonathan Taylor, in a tough matchup behind a banged up offensive line, continue being the RB1 that he was drafted to be? And also Michael Pittman. This is a tough matchup for Pittman. Super talented player, but, you know, can Carson Wentz and Michael Pittman continue their connection? Also, Field, you know this. I desperately want Mo Alie-Cox to be a thing. I want him to be a thing.
I know.
I have a weird obsession with Mo Alie-Cox. Yeah. I do love my obscure tight ends. And I love me some Mo Alie-Cox. He had 2 touchdowns last week, but still got Jack Doyle hanging around. So can Mo Alie-Cox build on the momentum from last week? Can he become a thing?
Let me just clean up one stat before we say goodbye. Mike Davis has 104 rushing yards this season. Let me get this correctly. Kyle, send this to me. He has 104 yards before contact. He has 100 yards after contact. He has not been his
amazing.
Friend so
That's
far
incredible.
This year along the offensive line.
Yeah. Mike Davis, start buying your offensive linemen some dinner. Let's Send go. Some watches, something. Let's go.
All right. We come back tomorrow. We got a lot to clean up, plus waiver wires, Monday Night Football recap, an update on the Survivor League, and perhaps, I don't know, some other stuff that will be important as well. For Matthew and Stefania and Daniel, I am Field. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.
Peace out.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady, out there hustling for us with advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job. Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.